This is Geek Speak. A show about society, technology, and where they intersect. Today's episode, Monday aims to sleep in space. I'm Lyle Troxell, and with me in the air room, after a little bit of hiatus, is Mr. Ben Jaffe. Ben, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hey, wasn't it bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity?
Yeah, but that just wasn't declarative enough, wasn't clear enough that we were a show about society.
That's true. We kind of are. We kind of always have been.
We always have been. We talk a lot about what we think and feel and all that.
Yeah. How's it going?
It's good. It's good to see you.
It's been a minute.
It has been.
Or an hour. It's been a long time.
So we record regularly at Netflix in Los Gatos, and today we're recording on Monday.
Yeah, they made me pay more to get in the door today.
They do. You told me that you have a Monday story for us.
Oh, yeah. So according to the University of Vermont Complex Systems Center, I don't know who they are, but apparently they analyze Twitter messages for sentiment. So basically they told us what we already know, which is that people don't like Mondays. In fact, you could even call it a case of the Mondays.
You kind of tout this as like, why do they even report it? Like, of course that's true.
Yeah. Well, so there's a little bit more to this. Well, there's not more to this story itself, but the page has a number of other things. I mean, recently there was the mass shooting in Las Vegas on October 2nd, and that was according to the way that they do sentiment analysis. Twitter's saddest day on record. And then also...
So you're saying that since they've been analyzing this, this was the saddest day on record.
Right. And they go all the way back to, what is that, 2009? And it's interesting to look at this plot. You can kind of see it's pretty consistent. It kind of very slowly is slooping downwards, which I don't know what that says about our future. But then there are all these little spikes, and they're like individual days where like someone was elected, or in a positive way or in a negative way, where there was a terrorist attack, where there's, you know, some happy, some sad thing. And you can see it in the sentiment on Twitter. And naturally, this is fairly noisy, but you can definitely see the clear outliers.
Yeah. It's interesting. I wonder if there is some way of using that analysis to relate other modifications of markets or something like that, right? If you took a look at that trend and then looked at a day after that, do the markets not fare as well, or are they fare better?
Right.
That kind of thing.
Right.
I think that it's more, I think what you're saying is the noise would probably totally obliterate any kind of knowledge you could gain from it. But it is interesting. And of course, the more location information is in Twitter posts, the better you could focus around certain areas. Like there's a pretty serious fire in the San Jose area right now.
Yeah, the sunrise today was beautiful as a result. But
yeah, unfortunately.
But of course,
you know, the sentiment in New York's probably not very different compared to yesterday. But in this area, it's probably different.
Yeah, yeah. It does. I mean, this is kind of a truism, but it's kind of amazing to see in 2017 what we can do with all of this data.
Yeah. Ben, does Facebook do that kind of analysis too, or do you not know? I mean, we talked about that.
Yeah, well, Facebook does all kinds of analysis, and I mean, if you look at Facebook or Google or any of the companies like that, the goal is not just to do the analysis, but to try to serve that back to the consumer, to the person with the account, in a way that improves their life or improves their service or whatever. So, there's a lot of incentive to kind of try and make sense of all of the data that these companies collect.
Yeah, interesting. Well, let's talk about
I actually wanted to ask you a question since we're talking about Mondays. When you go into work on a Monday, do you... So I was talking to my manager at work, and he was telling me about this this Monday dread, as if it was a thing that everyone feels.
I have no way have that feeling.
No. Because, like, yeah, I have Saturday, I have Sunday, they're nice and relaxing and everything, but I tend to find myself wanting to start Mondays earlier in the day and just, like, jumping in and getting a bunch of stuff done and being really productive, and that feels really good for me. But I know everyone's different.
I think I've always been pretty good about making sure that I set myself to enjoy what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And so I definitely enjoy my job. And so Mondays just represent another cycle of my job. But at the same time, lots of times I start the week with, okay, I'm going to do all these things. And so Sunday night comes around and I'm like, I didn't achieve all those things. Mm. And that's because I set my expectations incorrectly, you know?
Yeah, right.
At the same time, this weekend, I achieved quite a bit of things. I had a good party at my house. Like, lots of things occurred that made the weekend feel great, and I was definitely ready for the day. However, when I was leaving on Friday on the shuttle home, mm-hmm. I had intended to finish something that I didn't finish, and I kept on thinking I would finish it, and then I forgot about it. So this morning, I'm like,
oh no,
I didn't merge that pull request. Oh, you know, just like
it's now I got to do that.
Yeah, but it only took a few minutes.
Yeah. No, it is nice to finish things up nice and cleanly on Friday. But
are you a shuttle guy? Do you shuttle to Facebook?
Yes, indeed. They have a shuttle. I live in Campbell, and I hop on the shuttle in Campbell.
How long is the ride?
It's about 50 minutes, 55, sometimes an hour. It depends on when you go. And yeah. So I tend to try to go on either one of the earliest buses I can or the latest bus I can, because I'd rather avoid the traffic.
Can you work in a moving vehicle?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it's one of those big buses, right? Full size, like Greyhound size bus?
It's not Greyhound size. Yeah, actually it is Greyhound size. It's a weird mental dance I do with myself, because if I think about it too much, then I can't work on the bus. And I get dizzy, and it's really bad. But I just kind of have to dive, either fully dive into my work
and forget about your movement,
right, or not at all.
Do you think,
although I have figured out that as we're going through the parking lot, I need to not work. So yeah. I always have 10 minutes. I get on the bus. The bus goes, snakes through this parking lot, which normally would make me nauseous. And then it goes down the street, picks up at one other building, snakes through that parking lot. And then they get on the freeway. And so those 10 minutes I always have to do nothing. And I always, in the 40 minutes of work that I can get on the shuttle ride, I always have a clearer mind because of it. It's kind of nice.
And your intention is not to think about it.
My intention is to just turn off my brain and get through the snaking through the parking lot. What's your experience on that? Do you take the shuttles?
Yeah, I take the shuttles as much as possible. I live quite a ways from the shuttle stop, but my kids go to school on the way. So I normally, when I'm driving my kids to school, I drop them off and then I get on the shuttle. And the shuttle has been a very small vehicle. And today, for the first time, we're trying out a very large bus, which is
nice.
Yeah, well, it's nice in the sense that it's much more comfortable, and you know, it doesn't move around as much. Mm-hmm. At the same time, there's not necessarily enough people to justify it. So we'll see if we can increase the count. But in any case, I have no trouble working while driving in a bus, and even in a vehicle where I'm being tossed around, I don't get any motion sickness. And maybe it's because I grew up in the mountains as a kid. But I think it's interesting to me, as you say, that it's problematic for you. I've been looking a lot. My newest kind of interest has been on meditation and how the brain gets trained. And,
oh, nice.
Yeah, and one of the things that I find fascinating is that if you think about that you're moving, you have problems with it. But if you don't, you don't. And of course, your brain is functioning – also, obviously functioning differently depending on your state of mind regarding your movement. That's neat.
I guess I just wouldn't think that your vestibular system, which incidentally is one of my favorite words, that your vestibular, your system of balance would be like that experience would be affected by your mindset. I wonder if it's like that system is either affected by your mindset, or that you're based on your mindset, you're more likely to take in input from that system.
I would assume that if you are drowsy versus you're sprinting through the woods, your vestibular system would operate extremely differently. So that's both mindsets, isn't it? I mean,
well, but there's a physiological difference there.
Well, mindset.
If you're sprinting through the woods,
so when you say mindset, there is physiological, right? It's chemical, and it's what parts of the brain are active. Anyway, we won't go into this, but you'll hear more about this kind of topic as I learn more about it.
Yeah, I guess I just have one thought, which is that I often think of humans, people, as similar to computer systems, because I think about computer systems a lot. But with computer systems, there's a pretty clear demarcation between what's hardware, the physical stuff, and what's software, the not physical stuff, and the relationship of those two things. And humans are just not that way.
No, brains aren't that way at all.
No. So that's kind of fun.
I did hear an interesting analogy. You know about Thinking Fast and Thinking Slow, that book, Think Fast, Think Slow? It's a pretty interesting topic and idea. And basically, there's different ways of processing stuff. And
is it like system one and system two thought?
System one
is not intentional and not conscious. It's intuitive. It's like very fast reactions. And the other is like where you sit down and you think, okay, should I, la, la, la. And actually, I recently was watching a thing on phishing attacks. You get an email and it says you need to re-authenticate in Slack. And you click the link. That's your system one. But if you're suspicious of it, then you think, oh, should I click the link? And that's your system two.
Right. And the system two, of course, is much slower, but it allows us to take advantage of all these tools of logic that we have.
Right.
System one doesn't have logic. And so an analogy I just recently heard, I think, from Alan Kay, who's one of the inventors of the personal computer and definitely of the mobile revolution, in any case, and a programmer of note. He kind of made a reference to system one is more like memory recall with no processing. It's just pattern matching off of large memory sets.
Memory recall with no processing.
Right. So basically, it's pattern matching of an experience it's had before. So if you've played the flute thousands and thousands of hours, you put your lips together and you play it, you're not rethinking how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Your body's been trained from memory to do it.
Oh,
and
interesting.
So all
so
of
just
that
like
system one is basically just pulling a large data set and reusing experiences you've had before.
I want to play the flute. How do I make my lips? Oh, I'll just recall that rather than, oh, maybe I need to think about how I.
And this is why it's so fast and it's a pattern matching system and all that. And then the logical side, unfortunately, system one, system two relate to each other. System two uses system one, and therefore we have a lot of fallibility in our logic because we're
cognitive biases, right, and things like that.
And all those side effects of illusions and things that our systems don't understand because they match the patterns that already exist. Really, really cool stuff. Anyway, let's move on to kind of sad news. I feel like we should be playing some kind of sad music.
Yeah.
But let's not. What's the story?
Doodle-loom. Doodle-loom.
Nicely done.
Yeah, I practiced. AOL Instant Messenger. Ever used it? Ever heard of it?
Heck yeah. Tons of times. The first time I ever like remember just typing and uncontrollably laughing because of my dialogue through
lulled.
Text. Was I literally lulled before there was the term. No, like food coming out of my nose, kind of just laughter from typing.
Ooh, that's
was AOL Instant Messenger.
I
meant liquid. I didn't mean food. It's a burrito.
No, that's not good. It's going away.
It's going away.
It's going away.
The service, the application, the both.
I think the whole kit and caboodle. Because so, when was the last time you used it?
A long time.
Yeah,
a long time.
I mean, it is really important to you and to me.
Well,
in our memories.
Historically important to me, yeah.
Yeah, but not things that not something we use every day. So, and this is according to a statement from Oath, which is an oddly named behemoth entity, which is under Verizon combining AOL with Yahoo, which they just, anyway. They went with Oath.
That sounds not like a good name.
Especially in the midst of all of the Yahoo stuff, like every single one of their accounts was hacked and like all, and they went with Oath. I guess they may have come up with that name beforehand. I actually don't know, but.
Okay. In any case, Oath, which owns Yahoo and AOL and Verizon and other things.
Yeah.
They're killing AOL.
They're killing AOL. Well, but again, like when was the last time you or anyone has used it? So, they shut down. They already partially shut it down. We may have covered it. I'm not sure before. Where if you're using something like ADM or Audium or any of these other chat clients,
Adium.
Yeah, I know. No one knows. In an episode, we figured out how it was pronounced based on something. And
sure.
We all agreed, and now we don't agree anymore because we have bad memories. But anyway. Other chat clients would use AOL Instant Messenger's same protocol. So that way you wouldn't necessarily have to have AIM installed on your computer to chat with other people using that service. So that's already been shut down. But they are officially turning everything off as of December 15th. And I'm kind of okay with it.
I like that IRQ is still going.
IRQ. Yeah, that's true. It is.
Do you mostly use for messaging of that sort?
I use Facebook Messenger. I mean, so a part of it is that I work for Facebook. So I'm dogfooding the product, right?
Right.
But the other thing is I started using it before I worked for Facebook, and I started using it for kind of a silly reason. I love the soundscape of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
use the sound effects of that one, too?
Well, there's the pa-ting that you hear. But then there are all these other little sounds, little interaction sounds. Like if someone is typing, there's kind of a, almost like a horse clip-clopping. Like that. And all these little cues make it, I don't know, pleasant to interact with, at least for me. Of course, there are other people who it drives them nuts and whatnot.
I'm assuming,
but it's
also
fun. I got to meet the team who worked on it once I started Facebook.
Did you get to meet the soundscape person?
The what?
The person that did the sound?
I don't think I met the person who made those sounds, but I've chatted with the sound design team on a bunch of projects.
Oh, cool.
And
so
I actually collaborated with
team.
Them
That's
too.
Really,
they're brilliant.
We use Slack at the office, and actually we use
Slack
Keepspeak as well. Yeah, Slack's a great chatting service, and I use text messaging, which on Apple devices is Messenger, and I think that's it. The three and Hangouts, but I just don't like Hangouts, and I don't really know why. I don't know if I don't like it or not, but I don't end up using it, which is equivalent, I guess.
I don't like it either, and I don't know. I think I just had a bunch of negative experiences with notifications not properly being marked as read or unread in
yes.
the right way.
Totally.
And so I have a little bit of OCD with unread notifications. So if I see that something is unread, I have to click on it so that way it's not unread anymore.
Right.
But I would click on it and then I'd go away and I'd come back and it would be unread again. And it just really drove me up the wall. So
it's funny because, Google is touted over having very good services, so you'd think that that would be done really well.
Yeah,
and not so much.
But it's hard. Messenger has problems too. Slack has problems too. Like all of them have
problems.
Speaking
of something that's kind of interesting about Messenger is that I'm now regularly using Facebook as my Craigslist replacement. My posting of stuff on the market.
Is this through? Yeah, through Market.
Facebook
Marketplace.
No, that's a podcast.
I should.
Yeah, maybe Market.
I should know the name of it.
Yeah.
But there's a Market tab, yeah.
Yeah, I had experience recently where I was, selling a food mixer, and I put it on Craigslist. I didn't put it on eBay.
Wait, you were selling a food mixture?
Mixer.
Oh, okay.
Like a dough mixer.
I just had to ask questions.
A food mixture.
If it's a food mixer, I don't have questions.
No Cheerios.
I'm like, wait, are you going to do a Soylent replacement thing?
I like that it could have been I was having a party, like a food mixer. No, so like a Cuisinart dough mixing mixer.
Oh, I would have bought that off.
I figured that somebody I'd know might have do that. So I posted it on Craigslist and got like one person said, "You're posting that for too cheap. It should be more expensive." I was like, oh, thanks.
Whoa, that's
nice. But they didn't want to get it.
That was really sweet.
Yeah, it was really cool. But they were a little far away. So then I was like, well, I know a lot of people, in the area and so on Facebook, so I'll go ahead and use that. That was the first time I used it. And I had like 18 replies, people I didn't know, people I did know. And of course, one of the people that wanted it was somebody I knew, so I went to high school with. So of course, they got it, which is cool. But it seems like a pretty neat service, and it has a high level of turnaround. Now, for cars, though, I think eBay is still better for selling and buying cars because
you can sell and buy cars on eBay.
Yeah.
That just seems crazy to me. That seems crazy to me.
As well, yeah. Anyway. So I like the Market thing. Have you been using it?
No, I've never used it.
Okay, you should totally get on it because now you're going to start like buying things. Because I like found like a really cool metal bench, big slab of metal I've been welding lately.
Oh,
I'd pick that up. It serves that free giveaway thing that Craigslist does, where you just want to get rid of something. But there's of course a lot of people on Facebook,
and they've got better CSS too.
I love that I'm telling you about a service that your company makes.
Yeah, that seems a little funny to me. Anyway, so yeah, people are a lot of people about AIM are saying like, oh no, it's the end of an era and everything.
Well, yeah,
like
sure.
Okay, but that ship has kind of sailed. Yeah. Like it sailed a long time ago, and there wasn't a moment when everyone stopped using AIM, but it's happened over the last 5, 10 years, maybe.
I think it was definitely the first large-scale chat application. In fact, it was the first application that I really used and thought of as a chat application. I'd used, other systems of that sort, but never as an app. I thought of it as an application first, not a protocol first. So anyway.
I got to read a couple of the tweets that people are – this is from the article in USA Today, which you can find.
The other thing I use for messaging is Twitter. That's true.
Twitter. Yeah. That's true. I never use Twitter. So one, Jerry David tweets, Before text messaging, there was AIM. Before Twitter, there were AIM away messages. Before MySpace, there was your AIM bio. AIM bio.
Oh, sure.
I've got three more. Mute Bay writes, just because I haven't used AIM in years doesn't mean I'm not sad. It's like finding out a band you were really into 15 years ago broke up. And that's...
No, it's not, though, because you still have the music from that band. This thing's just going away.
It's just gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jennifer Manhart says, AIM statuses were the original subtweet. And then the last one, Kara Jeffrey tweets, my office still uses AIM, so this is sort of terrible.
Office still uses it? Oh, that's awesome.
Where do you work?
How do you use it?
Doodaloom, doodaloom, all day.
Man, your sound effects are awesome. I'm really excited about hearing more sound effects throughout the show.
Oh, don't get your hopes up.
Tell me about the experience of people going into space. You know, those astronaut people.
Yeah. I have never experienced this, but have you heard of Scott Kelly?
Isn't he an astronaut?
He is an astronaut. How'd you guess? I love Scott Kelly. He's fantastic. He's like, he's a fantastic science educator who's also an astronaut, and he's funny. And if I'm remembering right, he plays the guitar.
He produces amazing stuff. Yeah. He's like the astronaut that plays guitar with people and does cool experiments and shows them. Like if you see a really cool astronaut in the space station, that's him.
Yeah. He's like a geeky personality who is actually doing real stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. So he wrote a book called Endurance, A Year in Space, A Lifetime of Discovery.
Is it a how-to book?
Endurance is like the first word of that title, and it really should be. So he published a segment of this book, and it's really worth reading. And I'm planning on getting the actual book.
Right.
Yeah. So he's talking about he just got home from space.
This How long is was like he there?
40. He was there for, so first he was there for about 6 months. And in a nutshell, he said, yeah, it was pretty bad when I got back to Earth's gravity, but like it was endurable. Right. And then he was there for 350 some days.
It didn't make a year.
Almost a year. I know. I was thinking like,
I've been like, I got a cough. Got to stay.
Just 2 more years. Or maybe two more weeks.
Maybe I'm done. I'm going home now.
Yeah.
How bad was it after almost a year?
A lot worse.
I mean,
a lot harder.
Like, can't sit up and you pass out kind of stuff. Like, really bad stuff happens to your body.
Well, reading through this, first he describes a lot of the simplicities of life that you just don't get in space.
Like what?
Like, he says, it's a simple thing, sitting at a table and eating a meal with those you love. And many people do it every day without giving it much thought. For me, it's something I've been dreaming of for almost a year.
Wow.
Because he's been stuck in this little space module.
And you literally can't sit.
Microgravity.
Sit.
Yeah.
You have to strap yourself down.
You rehydrate some, eggs or something. Yeah.
No, but I mean, literally, you can't sit at a table. Even if there is a table, you can't sit. You got to strap yourself into a table.
Yeah. Eat a little granola bar.
Very simple. Does he have family?
Yeah. Yeah, he's got two daughters and a girlfriend and a twin brother who's also an astronaut, actually.
Would you go for a year in space?
Me? Oh, no. I would die. I'm far too weak. Like, really.
Well, muscle mass wouldn't really matter, Ben.
You're sitting across the table from me and just look at me and tell me, yeah, you would survive a year in space.
I look at you and I think, Ben probably has been in orbit. You seem like you...
It's genetic. I just don't put on fat. Mm. I can eat anything I want, and I might get diabetes, but I will never, ever be anywhere near obese. It's just genetic. And me and my entire family. And I'm tall, and therefore I'm tall and skinny.
Those things wouldn't hurt you in space. What would be difficult in space?
I also get migraines and headaches, and I my back gets achy, and it's just easy.
Okay.
So
what else was hard for him? Like, physically, was it hard for him?
So there's all that stuff. And then, so he's writing about 48 hours from getting back.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking about this weird experience of of, you know, you feel the Earth's gravity, everything is harder. It's hard to get up out of a chair. You feel like, he's saying, like, yeah, you feel like an old, really, really old man. So he's saying, okay, I make it to my bedroom without incident. I close the door behind me. Every part of my body hurts, all my joints, all my muscles are protesting the crushing pressure of gravity. I'm also very nauseated. And then he gets into bed and he falls asleep. And then, like, a couple hours, he wakes up when his girlfriend's coming to bed. And he's just talking about how seriously nauseated he feels. He manages to stumble his way carefully into the bathroom. And he turns on the light and he looks at his legs. And they're super swollen because of the... And he's got this rash from gravity pushing him against the sheets and, like, whoa, all of this stuff. And so this is something...
Just a year.
Something I didn't realize when I would see all of his stuff in space is that the science that he was doing, a very large part of it, not quite half, but a very large part of it was not science on other things, but science on himself. So he was sent up for almost a year to figure out how would a human body... So we understand pretty well, if you're up there for 6 months, what happens? Because a lot of people have been up there for 6 months. But people don't know, okay, what happens at month 9? What happens after a year? And so that's why they sent him up for a year. And that was part of the deal.
So his book is also part of the experiment in the sense that when he gets back, even if he's not in space, all the information, everything he's collecting, he wants to log really well because, of course, that's knowledge for all of us.
He said he's a science experiment for the rest of his life. Like, that's...
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, they want to see, like, okay, well, do you get cancer like a year after because of the doses of radiation that you get up there, or do you like you end up with
osteoporosis or other things,
the bone stuff?
Makes sense. Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to reading this book because he's such a good communicator too.
The longevity thing is fascinating from the perspective of potential long term movement of humans, like if we decide to go to Mars, things of that nature. But it's also interesting because we'll gain knowledge about the human body because of his experience, unrelated, you know, partially unrelated to, or things that matter us to us as well, us Earthlings.
Yeah,
cool, very, very interesting. I'll take a look at his article.
It's coming out soon. It's coming out.
Let us know how the book is too.
Yeah, I will. I will let you know once I get my copy on October 17th. You can pre-order in a bunch of places.
Cool. And again, the book is and author
Endurance: A Year in Space, A Lifetime of Discovery by who I wish was my friend, Scott Kelly.
You are listening to Geek Speak. I'm Lyle Troxell, and I'm speaking with Ben Jaffe, and we're talking about technology of the week and about how society is affected by technology. And now we're going to talk a little bit about, we'll start off by a news story, but then go into a bit of our technical geeky projects we've been working on. So why don't you tell me a bit about Google Home and maybe some of the problems with it?
So and this goes for Google Home, and it also goes for the Amazon Echo. I won't say the wake words this time because...
You just did, twice.
No, I didn't.
Oh, really?
No, Google Home is not a wake word.
Yeah, but the other one is.
However, if you say, okay, and then that thing, then... And Amazon Echo is not a wake word.
So the second word is a wake word if you said it that way.
But not by default. If you said it that way, then,
true.
You know...
That's true.
Sorry.
I have two in my house, and I have set one to the female name and one to the repetitive quality of sound.
sound.
Yes,
sound.
That one.
Well, you have two Echoes?
Yeah. You did it again, Ben. Yeah, I've got two. Sure, why not? They were on sale. So I've got one of the tall ones that has a speaker mount in it, and then I've got one of the short ones.
The normal one and the dot or something.
And the dot is plugged into our stereo system, and it's the main sound for our home. But I have to say, it's really horribly annoying because... I pay for Google Play Music, which is like a little music service of Google. I also have Amazon Prime. Both these services have music streaming that are not completely unlimited, which is a little irritating. Google Play right now, because I'm paying more for it, actually has a lot more. The thing I love about the most is no commercials on YouTube, which is fantastic. And it's for the entire family, right? So I've thought about switching over to Google Home because, of course, Google Home, I could play my free music service on it.
You can't do that on the Echo?
The
Go.
Amazon, no, you cannot play Google Play Music on the Amazon
at all?
Device. No, not at all.
You can do Spotify, but
you can do Spotify.
You can't do...
No. No.
What?
And you can't do Amazon Prime's music service on the Google Home thing.
But who wants Amazon Prime's?
Well, sorry. Amazon. Okay, so Amazon also has an unlimited streaming service that's paid money. So the Prime service is a limited streaming service, and then the all encompassing Ultra whatever is a paid service that's just like Google Play, except they don't have YouTube free commercials. Any case, both the services are restrict each other, and you know the Apple device asking Siri to do things for you also is limited. So all of them limit based off their service need. Oh, it's annoying.
That sucks.
So today I was looking at how you can do it. Like I keep on thinking I should make my own app and figure out how to do this. And one of the solutions, of course, is that with the services, you can actually download music. And if you download music, it's MP3, and then you can upload it to the other service. So the serious workaround for the Google Play Music to Amazon thing is download as much Google Music as MP3s and then upload it to the Amazon service. And then you can play it with your
So in other words, thing. Sync one service to the other manually.
Through your computer.
Through your computer.
Which doesn't exactly work because not all titles in the streaming service are available for download. Only some of them are.
They probably also might have different names.
All of this means that it's quite annoying, and it's not easy, and oh well.
Yeah, and yeah. So, I found something. How to fake a sleep timer on Google Home.
Sleep timer?
Sleep timer. You start playing music, or a podcast, or whatever it is. Or probably not a podcast, but you start playing music, and you fall asleep to Mozart, and then you want it to turn off after...
Oh, 30 minutes. Okay.
Yeah, it's a like a lot of alarm clocks have that if they have FM radios or whatever. And Google Home doesn't have that feature. Hmm. And so this woman, Lauren, is complaining on her blog about how Google Home doesn't have this feature. Like how do you get around this? How do you emulate the feature? So I thought that she was going to go into talking about doing what I did, because I also hacked around this feature, but she actually found a simpler way, and then I'll tell you my way in a second. But basically, there is a new feature in the Google Home firmware called Night Mode, and Night Mode will let you change the maximum volume level during a specified time. So basically, you say, let's say you want the music to stop at 10 p.m., and you go to bed at 9:30. Then you set your night mode to say 10 p.m. The maximum volume is zero.
Yeah, except that if you have an alarm, then the alarm doesn't go off because the volume is set to zero.
Well, then you set the maximum alarm.
You set the maximum time back up. Your music comes back on because it's been streaming all night.
And then you wake up to Mozart, to more Mozart, and you're streaming Mozart all night.
Okay, that's a pretty good way of doing it in the sense you don't have to program anything. What was your solution to the same problem?
My solution was I got a Tessel, which is kind of similar to an Arduino or a Raspberry Pi. Basically a little computer. And I'm running Node on it. Are you laughing? Because you think you know what I'm...
I forget how you're going to do it, yeah.
Yeah, I'm running Node on it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what do I do?
You play an audio file of yourself saying turn it off at some point.
Yeah, but that would be kind of disruptive to me.
Do you do it ultrasonically?
No.
Do you do it very, very quiet?
Through headphones. So the Google Home has two microphones on it. One on the top left, one on the top right. And so
it's wearing a pair of headphones?
I was wearing a pair of headphones, yeah. So I hot glued clothespins onto the side of the Google Home. And then the clothespins the clothespins hold the earbuds.
So it's a hardware and software hack.
It's a hardware
and software hack. And you have to have a machine
running. Also, if you do this, be careful because... Well, first of all, the hot glue doesn't seem to have damaged the Google Home, although sometimes they fall off. But I was playing music while I was hot gluing it, and the music started to stutter. And I thought, uh-oh. So I started blowing on the hot glue to cool it down. Mm-hmm. So just be careful if you do this.
Why do you require to hot glue it?
I wasn't required to.
Because you want the headphones really close.
I could have put a bandana over it.
So you could have also had... gotten ultrasonic speakers and played.
Yeah, but my hearing actually goes up pretty high. I can hear up to like 17K. And so.
Put it at 20.
Yeah, I guess you could put it at 20. I did actually try this once. I tried to emulate.
We covered stories a couple of weeks ago of somebody doing this.
Yeah, and I don't know what method they used, but I couldn't. I didn't guess it.
You probably don't have an inducer that can produce the volume, the frequency. So you have to have a special ultrasonic inducer.
Is that about 18K? Anyway, I couldn't figure out how to translate the normal speech into
that range.
18K frequency without having lower tones, but still having it be understandable to the Google Home. Yes. So I'm not sure exactly how they did that.
So software problem.
But anyway, so the advantage to this is now I can send arbitrary commands to it.
Right.
So the Google Home and the Echo, I'm trying not to say the common wake word, both of them have this issue where, and actually it's kind of a feature. It's a feature and an issue where you can't say like, okay, my smart home device, play Mozart or play KDFC at 6 a.m. Right, because I want to wake up to KDFC in the morning. You can't do that because
there's got to be apps for this, right?
No, because it will only respond to voice command, aside from alarms and timers. Hmm.
And so Amazon's service has a lot more apps, and you can do a lot of things, but you can't play the music services.
You cannot do that. You can't push something to the device, but you can react to a voice command.
So the way we commonly have my wife commonly puts her phone down for charging in the house, then goes away from the phone, and then I try to call. We don't have a phone line, so she doesn't hear it. But the Amazon device is very loud. It's either plugged into the home stereo system and can play like all over the house, or it's in one of the rooms she's in. And so for me to call her when she doesn't have her phone on her, but I know she's at home because I know where her phone is. I will sometimes start GeekSpeak on the Amazon devices in the house really loud. Because, of course, because you can say
it's streamed to this device.
Because I can say to start an audio file from multiple services. And, of course, an audio file that she knows is me, of course, is this show. And I'll start it at, at level 10. And the first time it happened, when I first did it, I didn't think to play my own voice. I just started playing rock and roll really loud. It was like Metallica.
Well, once I did this with Call Me Maybe.
That's good. I should use the Call Me.
Yeah.
Anyway, it scared the bejesus out of her. She's freaking out. And then it didn't. And then when I did my voice, now it scares the heck out of her. But at least she knows, it's her I'm trying to call.
I think I actually started playing Call Me Maybe. And Masumi was home. Mm-hmm. And she didn't get the message. But she was just like, okay, this is happening now.
This is
and
nice.
Just started, kept listening to the music. And I'm like,
you have to have it loud enough to get
Okay, so I'll stop it and I'll restart it. And maybe that'll
signal.
So
there still isn't a way to do what you're saying, there's still no way to do this.
There's a way to do something that would really benefit you.
What about hot gluing headphones to my device?
Sorry, you got to do that. Through my Node app, I can send arbitrary commands now. So I can say...
Audio commands.
So I can schedule my Tessel to say something through the headphones at a certain time.
Sure. So you can do anything you want.
Like play KDFC at 6 a.m. I can also send a message via my web app, which is protected with encryption this time, or with authentication, I mean. I can tell it, call Ben Jaffe. And then...
How does it call Ben Jaffe?
So I tell the Tessel to say, okay, blah, blah, call Ben Jaffe. And then Google says, okay, calling Ben Jaffe. And then it calls me. And then I pick up my phone. And now my voice is thundering through the house. So it works. It works really well.
Okay, so I'll have to do the same hack for Amazon devices.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, so the Tessel... Why did you choose the
Tessel
over the Pi, the Raspberry Pi?
Because I like...
Which is more fun to say.
I like JavaScript.
Mm, but and Tessel doesn't use JavaScript.
Tessel runs Node.
Tessel has a Node interface, but actually runs Lua. Node compiles to Lua. I think it's Lua. I always thought that was really interesting. I mean, it does make sense if you want to have a compiled language. You don't really want to have a JavaScript runtime that always has to run.
I did the Raspberry Pi once, and I had to install Node. And I just barely didn't have enough space. And so I just had to, it took forever. I had to do this dance of like, okay, move these files off of it. Okay, move these files onto it. Okay, run this step of the command to install Node. Okay, move these files back off of it.
Seemed too complicated.
Yeah, it wasn't fun.
The Tessel is designed for programming with JavaScript. They say Tessel 2 is a robust IoT, Internet of Things, and robotics development platform leverage all the libraries in Node.js to create useful devices in minutes.
Yeah.
And which is cool. And so I had them,
it's
the
not,
Tessel folks that,
it's not,
that actually founded it mm-hmm. contributed to a conference I ran once.
Oh, nice.
Came and spoke and stuff. And I thought it was great, and they did a talk, and it was awesome. And you're right that it's extremely easy because all you have to do is know Node. If you know Node and you do want to do hardware, it's awesome.
Yeah.
And in fact, it doesn't run Node on the device, which is kind of, what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do have to say, though, as a web developer, and we've got so many different libraries, and most of them are very well documented, I've really gotten quite used to having good documentation.
Yeah, and they have good documentation.
Tesla has okay documentation. Oh, okay. In some ways, they've got good documentation. In other ways, it's pretty lacking. And it's just kind of stems from the fact that pretty much the entire thing is an open source project, including the hardware. So it's kind of, it can be tricky when you're running an open source project to keep all of your documentation up to date and to, I would do it again. I would use it again.
Yeah.
Actually, I think I would try a Raspberry Pi because I've never programmed one.
I think doing a Raspberry Pi is probably...
might be better.
Well, in the sense that you have a full computer and you've got Linux there and, you know, mm-hmm. you can run anything you want. It's a very different beast. But, you know, I've done most of my development work in hardware level stuff like that has been in Arduino because I used to teach mm-hmm. Arduino at campus and it's not the same level, right? You can't run Node, whatever you're running. It's a much lower level thing. But
right.
the devices can get much cheaper as well, right? So the micro pieces are like $9 or so to get a processor
yeah.
that's running.
You can get some cool. that are $4.
Yeah.
And also they're lower power.
I actually have a project that's half done to solve that people at the house don't have their cell phones problem with using a Node service or no, using a service and also using a Arduino.
Oh, nice.
So I just haven't finished it. I got to finish it for Valentine's Day this year. I'll tell you all more about it when I do that. Cool. So you're hacking stuff. When did you get this this talk to your Google device working? And have you set up more than just turning it off the music?
Yeah. So I'm sure you will empathize with this plight. I got it working. And then I was like, okay, it's not everything that I want it to be, so I guess I'll add this functionality. And then I broke it in the process of upgrading it. And then I had to go. So I left the house. It was broken for a week. At first it was actually playing an audio clip of my voice, which was much more consistent and worked, but it meant I couldn't send arbitrary commands.
Oh, right.
So then I changed it to using text-to-speech, and like I gave you that... impression of it, okay, go.
Right.
It's this weird British machine robot thing.
Probably not as good at detecting that, right?
No. It's pretty bad.
You could send arbitrary commands by sending audio files.
If I send an audio file, but I'm just using Firebase. I'm using Firebase to say, like, I want to run the command that says, okay, blah, 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 blah. And I don't want to, like...
You can do binary blobs in Firebase. Wait, so do you
like
Firebase
feel like sending...
Firebase is Google's like infrastructure in the cloud, right? What do you think of it? You've done much more besides that?
It's really easy.
It's really easy. It's got a lot
of documentation. It's really easy. It's really fast. I use it for most of my projects just because it's really fast to set up and you get authentication. It's just really fast.
So let's talk about what Firebase actually is.
All right.
It's a framework and a service and a whole bunch of libraries.
Wait, I'm confused.
Exactly. It is really kind of complicated, right?
It's a lot of stuff.
It used to be just – Firebase used to be a database, and then Google bought it, the group or the company, and then slowly took all their different services and started throwing it into Firebase. So Firebase has become the general umbrella for a whole bunch of application infrastructure at Google.
Well, I guess we could start with Firebase at about the time that Google acquired it. Firebase was fundamentally – a database service. If you want to put a database somewhere on the cloud and access it from multiple places and have it be real time and fast and everything, use Firebase. That's an option.
So let's just talk about what that means.
And then in addition to that, like how do you then go use Firebase? It's got a library for Android. It's got a library for iOS. It's got a library for www. It's even got libraries for like I can use it on my Tesla. No, I'm sorry, that makes sense. But I can use it on Arduino, actually, because someone has made a library for Arduino for integrating Firebase.
So talking about as the core of what it was at the original idea of this database in the cloud, you basically said, I want an account, and with that account, I'm going to make a database called Tree Love. And now anyone that has the key can write and read from that database. And the database is defined as you use it. So you say, I want another table or another, you know,
right.
connection. And
right.
you kind of, as you develop, you're creating the schema. And the actual system is completely run in the cloud and by their service. And so therefore, it can propagate and they can charge you when you actually get real customers. So it's really kind of neat in the sense that it's easy to start and it can scale up to full scale.
Yeah, I actually started in web development having not used databases pretty much ever.
Mm-hmm.
And so that idea wasn't very revolutionary to me. Of course, you can have a database. It's a place to put stuff. And now I want to put a thing called age. And now I want to put a thing called date. And now sure. I want to put an array of objects called trash. And I can put a bunch of things in the trash. And like, why shouldn't I just be able to add arbitrary things?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's not an uncommon idea in some sense that we've been doing this for a while. And the thing that Firebase has done very well is, as you said, it's had a whole bunch of plugins for different languages. So if you're familiar with JavaScript, you can define all your mm-hmm. all the interactions of your database through JavaScript and making objects that kind of make sense to you. And they work as persistent storage, even if your server crashes and restarts because all the data is safely saved in there. I think
right.
I did a game with, I think it was Firebase that I used it. I did a little game for a friend's party. You know, I just wanted to be able to sync four iPhone or four mobile devices together. And so I wrote an app and I just used their database. And because there was only four players at a time, it wasn't a big deal. So mm-hmm. effectively you open up the app with a phone and you have to have three other people playing at the same time. And then all your actions are synced between all four phones. And this, I did this, I think in like a night, like, or maybe two nights. So it's a very cool project. I've never done anything serious with it though. You know, I'm assuming you don't use it at Facebook.
No, we have a whole bunch of tools.
How much side projects do you do from a software perspective?
Or hardware perspective? Oh, it varies wildly. Like there was a period of probably 9 months that I didn't really do anything. The only coding I did was at work.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, in a way that felt really nice. And in a way it felt like, oh, what am I? Like, because programming is like playing with blocks, right?
Yeah.
Like it's fun.
Yeah.
It's just... So recently I've been picking up a lot more things. I've got the Google Home thing. There's another project actually called Re-Lyric Me.
Is that a project of yours?
It's a project of mine. And it came from the idea that I got into Hamilton. You're yes. also into Hamilton.
Of course.
Have I told you about this?
Yeah. Well, you did tell me this, but I don't remember.
I think I told you about the idea.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
First off, you've seen it a few times now.
I've seen it once.
You've seen it once? Oh, okay.
Have you seen it a couple
times? No, just once.
Yeah, it's a fantastic show. If
my kids all can sing all the lyrics verbatim perfectly, which is kind of
and there are a lot of lyrics.
Oh, there's a lot of lyrics.
So this makes it a perfect candidate for my idea, which is if you know all the lyrics, if they're like in your body, you can just sing them. Wouldn't it be an interesting challenge if you took random words and you replaced them with words that were similar, and then you tried to read it at speed or sing it at speed?
So it's kind of like a rhyming alternate version?
Yeah.
Did you write this? Is this working?
This is working.
Can we all play with it?
Yeah. Relyric.me. Don't crash my server. So, for example, I just have it up right now. So the second paragraph in it is the $10 founding father without a father got a lot farther by working a lot harder by yada yada. But if I replace it with all with words that rhyme, then I get the Glenn Smaller found in bother without a bother bought a brought farther by looking a bot harder by seeing a watt starter by seeing a self charter.
Okay, well, this is going to my home and I'm going to annoy my children to no end. That's fantastic.
So wouldn't it be okay? First of all, if you go there, you have a couple sliders.
Yeah, I see rhyme and leaven.
Yes. Do you know what Levenstein is?
No.
Levenstein distance, string similarity. So if you have a word, for example, let me get a good example here. 10, the word 10. If you compare the word 10 against every word in the dictionary, and you can get what's called a Levenstein distance for each of those words. So for example, the word 10 and the word tend have a Levenstein distance of 1 because there's only one operation required to get from the string 10 to the string tend. You just add the D at the end. And the operations are adding a character somewhere, removing a character somewhere, or changing.
But this
character isn't
necessarily rhyming. This is about...
It's not necessarily rhyming, but it's words that are similar in the characters that are used.
Okay.
So so basically, I go through and I compare each one of the words in Hamilton with an entire rhyming dictionary, with all of the words in the dictionary for Levenstein distance. And then the other thing that I do is I take that word and I look at all the words that are 50 in front and 50 behind, mm-hmm. and I check to see if any of them rhyme. So if any of them do rhyme, then I replace them. I swap them. So for example, name, brain, and drain are in Madison's little paragraph in the first song. So I just swap all those around.
What's the paragraph?
Totally changes. The paragraph is...
the unaltered version.
Yeah. All right.
You got to sing it too.
I'm just going to turn off the rhyming in the 11. So, then a hurricane came and devastation rained. Our man saw his future drip dripping down the drain, put a pencil to his temple, connected it to his brain, and he wrote his first refrain, a testament to his pain.
Okay, now...
I swap it around. Then a hurricane name and devastation rained. Our man saw his future drip dripping down the brain, put a pencil to his temple, connected it to his drain, and he wrote his first refrain, a testament to his drain. So it changes. It, so that combined with some leaven, some rhyme, and then there's also a safe for work checkbox, and I filter out some swears. So you can, you know, give it to your kids.
Have you done competition parties yet with this? Because obviously that's the thing to do, is have people come and sing the crazy version.
Why, yes, in fact. I'm glad you asked. And in fact, a good friend of mine works at a company called Caffeine. They do video game streaming primarily. It's basically really, really good video streaming. And we are doing a live Hamilton read. And I'm
altered
looking
up... read?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Read or sing? Because you can't do a Hamilton read. You got to Hamilton sing.
Oh, it's a sing.
Okay, good.
It's a sing. So actually, here's the best
score
part
as well.
By chance. So I started this before this happened. Lin-Manuel Miranda and the people who manage all that stuff decided, everyone's singing along to us, let's release a version that's instrumental. Which is
fantastic.
Perfect.
Yes. So the entire show as just instrumental.
The entire show just instrumental. So yeah, that is coming up. It is going to be on October 24th from 5 to 7 p.m., 5 to 6, excuse me, Pacific time. Caffeine.tv.
Okay, caffeine.tv. We'll have links at geekspeak.org. In fact, everything we talk about up at this on the show, we have links to at geekspeak.org. So again, this is October 25th, did you say?
October 24th.
October 24th.
It's a Tuesday.
And what time?
5 p.m. Pacific Standard
Cool.
Time.
So mark your calendars and listen in. And are you going to be one of the performers?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And so you're going to be able to stream the music as well? This is going to be mm-hmm. okay to have the score and everybody singing on top of it?
Yes.
Do you have...
And you can type at us.
Are you all going to be together to do this?
Yeah, we're going to all cram into the little video gaming booth at Caffeine's headquarters. Yeah.
Fantastic.
It's going to get hot in there. It's a small booth.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
And there are a lot of characters in Hamilton.
There are. Yeah, you got to have voice involved.
So we're trying to figure out, do we want to each be an individual character? Or do we want to all kind of... sing
I think
it.
Given to the tone of it, you should have a randomization going on. So,
yeah.
You know, every person should have to switch characters as they go.
So, historically, what has happened is one person will start going, and then something will, like, they'll read something and just lose it. And then, you know, you'll drop all the lines, and someone else has to take over. So, it's fun.
All right. So, relyric.me and... you can play around with this tool and then listen in on the singing.
Yeah, and sometime in the next couple of weeks, I'm going to generalize this. So you can type
in any lyrics you want.
Any lyrics you want, as long as I'm using AZ Lyrics. And
what's AZ Lyrics?
AZLyrics.com is just it's a site. It's a lyrics site. And I am, hopefully no one from there is listening. I'm scraping their HTML, grabbing the lyrics, mutating them. And then displaying them.
You should put an ad up for them on your site to make it feel more safe.
Now that'll probably attract their attention.
Under the covers. Right, isn't podcasting great? If you blogged about this, you're likely to be found out and you'll find out about it, right?
Yeah.
But because it's a podcast, people that listen to this listen to the show. It's not like, you know,
it's great. It's a family.
Eventually, of course, we'll get audio will be completely indexable, just like text, and we'll lose that pseudo public anonymity that we have.
The obscurity. Yeah. How about you? Have you been working on anything?
You know, I've been spending a lot of time in my wood shop.
Nice.
And learning about...
You've been building your wood shop.
I have been building tools, stuff inside my wood shop, yeah. And doing, of course, the thing I do quite a bit in my life. I watch a lot of YouTube videos to learn. It's actually kind of how I learned to program at a more serious level, which is kind of funny.
Nice.
But the thing I've been gotten into lately, I have a very small workshop. In fact, it's smaller than it needs to be a wood shop. But what that requires is me to think about everything very carefully and plan everything very carefully. Like a small house, right? Where you have to kind of...
Like a tiny home.
Like a tiny home, yeah. So it's like a tiny workshop. And that means that even though it would be great to have like a 12-inch or a 6-inch planer, I don't have a planer. I don't have a joiner. And those actually restrict quite about what you can do. Do you know what a joiner and a planer are?
I know what a planer is. That ensures that all of the sides of the wood are parallel and perpendicular to each other.
Not perpendicular, but parallel. Exactly. So a jointer,
that's true.
A jointer does perpendicularity.
And a jointer does perpendicularity.
Yeah, and a planer does parallelability.
So that is
parallel.
That's important if you're building furniture. It's not important if you're just... building a thing to
it's almost always
get something
important.
Done.
But the thing that's interesting is that when you buy dimensional wood, that's already
like a 2x4,
squared, yeah, those are already perpendicular and parallel. You don't have to worry about it. So as you cut it on your table saw and do other things to it, it maintains its parallel and perpendicular quality. So it's okay. But if you get raw wood that you want to make yourself, you want to mill yourself, you do have to deal with this problem of making it flat and such. And also the joiner can also make a thing that's wobbly flat.
Okay.
And then if you push that flat side up against the side of it, you can make a perpendicular side. In any case, though, those tools are big and they're
expensive. They are big.
And especially a joiner takes a lot of surface space. It's a big, big cast iron thing. And what I've gotten into recently is that actually before those machines existed, people were doing this. How were they doing this?
Whoa.
They're using planers, right? They're using planers and scrapers. And so I'm getting better at hand planing and decided that since it's only a joy anyway, I'll just get better at cutting wood effectively and learning those skills. So that's been one of my side passions.
That's really cool.
Learning to plane. So recently I had to, when you take two boards and you want to make a larger board out of it, you put them together.
Yeah.
What you want to do is you want to get those.
I just thought it was only really huge trees. Like really, really big trees.
It's almost never really huge trees. So one of the tricks that I did recently and to great success is you just take the two edges that you want to merge together to be a flatter plane.
Yeah.
And you put them on edge next to each other. So you just close them like a book, if you will.
Uh-huh.
And that edge that's the two edges that are going to join together when you flatten them back out again, if you take those two edges and you clamp them and then you just run a plane against that, even if there's inconsistencies left and right, those inconsistencies will cancel each other.
I want to describe what you just did.
Please
do. You just held your hands out in front of you.
Face down.
Palms face down.
With my knuckles touching.
Right. And then you just rotated your hands, so you were almost praying.
Palm to palm, yeah.
Yeah, and so that's what you're talking about. You take the piece of wood that are supposed to be flat, like your hands out flat.
Like the top of a desk or a table.
Mm-hmm. And then you rotate them in that way.
Yeah.
And then you scrape along the top?
You scrape along the top with a plane. And the plane edge, of course, is going to make those two boards flat next to each other. They're the same height, if you will.
Mm.
But the interesting is if you have a left or right tilt to it, that angle will cancel itself when it recloses together.
Oh, interesting.
And so you get a perfect fit. And I did that recently, just a very simple thing. I didn't have a joiner, and I wanted to make a square edge, and I did that with a hand plane, very sharp hand plane, got another kind of sharpening tools. And the desk that I made has – you cannot tell there's a seam except for the wood grain, if the grain change.
That's a really cool tip.
Yeah. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of David Lawrence and is used with permission. And GeekSpeak is Creative Commons Attribution 3.0. You can use their stuff any way you'd like. Just let them know we made it. Today's title is by Greg Merkley, Monday Aims to Sleep in Space. And Aims, of course, is A-I-M. Our theme song is by Michael Newman of Pet Star Music. Thank you, Greg, for the title. And Ben, thank you so much for joining me here on GeekSpeak today.
Always a pleasure, as Miles would say.
Yes, you would. You don't have a tagline at the end, do you?
I don't. No, thanks. Thanks, man.
That's good. You got to start getting consistent on it.
Yeah.
Everything we talked about on GeekSpeak, of course, is available up at geekspeak.org. Please do visit us and join us and all that stuff. And we even have a support page if you'd like to help us out. And of course, you can email us questions and such, geeks@geekspeak.org. And we're on Twitter and Facebooks and all those things as well. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you next week. My name's Lyle Trucks.
And I'm Ben. Bye.
Anything else you want to say in post show? Because we actually normally do post shows.
Oh yeah,
I don't know if we normally do. We do sometimes.
Let me see if I have any windows open with interesting things.
The woodworking stuff was almost a post show because it wasn't really geeky.
Yeah. So apparently in the new Star Trek, don't worry, no spoilers. But in the new Star Trek television show, Star Trek Discovery, episode 3, apparently there is a moment where there is some source code scrolling by on the screen, and of course. That's a challenge. What is that source code?
Have people
where did
it
come from? Because if you look, so there are a number of blog posts out there where they look at all of these popular movies that had source code, whether it's, you know, you're hacking into the alien mainframe in Independence Day or whatever it is. And they try to identify where did, you know, the people who produced this movie, where did they get the source code from? And sometimes it's like, PHP from WordPress and like yes. What? That makes no sense.
What's the Star Trek one?
The Star Trek one was the decompiled source code of Stuxnet. Do you remember Stuxnet?
What is Stuxnet?
Stuxnet was
I'm blanking.
Stuxnet was the computer virus that was meant to attack nuclear
yes.
enriching. Yeah,
the source code for that.
Yeah.
Not the source code.
Decompiled source code.
Okay. Yes. Because we don't have source code for it because we don't actually know who wrote it.
Yeah.
But, interesting.
That was like 7 years ago.
Why did they use that? What were they doing with it?
I don't know.
Is it just scrolling the background?
They were looking for something that wasn't particularly recognizable that also has a nice open license because that's important. Do you know what the license is?
No.
For the dump of the Stuxnet
decompiled. No, what's the license?
The license on this GitHub repo is called Do What the Fook You Want To Public License version 2 December 2004. Everyone is permitted to contribute a copy and distribute verbatim or modified copies of this license document, and changing it is allowed as long as the name is changed. All caps, Do What the Fook You Want To Public License. Terms for copying, distribution, and modification, 0. You just do what the fook you want to.
That's a great
That's
license.
Awesome. Yeah.
And so the Star Trek group did that. The writers did that.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
They used it. They didn't
Why?
Use a license.
Why was
but
there
they
source
used
code?
It.
Did you see that episode? Have you been
No.
watching it?
I watched the first episode, and I just found my blood pressure was too high. Because it's kind of like all of the J.J. Abrams-verse movies, the last three, especially the last of the three.
Where can you watch it?
CBS, I think.
CBS, okay. So you're not interested in watching because it's too
it's
fast.
It's too fast. Yeah, and this doesn't go for everyone. This is just for me. The thing that I liked about
The Next Generation,
I don't love the original series, but a thing I loved about The Next Generation and about Deep Space Nine and about all of the old and the TNG movies was just they had a calmness about them. You know, like they had action sequences, but the action sequences were not. I didn't feel like it was in a horror film. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel like there was that much suspense going on. But watching the first episode of Discovery, it felt suspenseful to me. And I thought like, oh, I don't really.
So Greg clarifies that in Canada, you can watch it on the Space Channel. And in the U.S., you can watch it on CBS All Access.
CBS All Access, yeah. I do want to say the thing that I love as instead of Star Trek Discovery is called The Orville. And that's Seth MacFarlane's
parody
comedy that is Star Trek like, and I get the impression that Seth MacFarlane was like, you know, I really just want to make a sci-fi movie or sci-fi
TV Orville?
Show. The Orville, O-R-V-I-L-L-E. I have heard some people don't like it. I love it. I think it's fantastic. It's a little slower. It's a little calmer.
It's on Fox.
And
it's not animated. I thought it was animated.
No.
It's no. He's starring in it.
He is the captain. Yeah. And it's got some comedy in it, but it also kind of it explores some interesting issues too. And that's kind of what I loved about Star Trek and what I'm missing in the new one. So
do you like have cable television and stuff?
No.
Okay. So you just make do.
I don't watch TV.
Except for the Orville.
I watch Colbert and John Oliver on YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah, so actually, the Daily. I love the Daily Show.
You don't pay for YouTube Red?
No, I've been thinking about it though because the ads have been getting worse and worse. So
my personal computer, my computer, my laptop, which I use for programming at work, and mm-hmm. I also use for personal stuff, has two. You know, you can take Chrome and you can actually have different personas.
Yeah, the different user profiles.
Yeah. So I have two profiles, right? I've got my personal one and my work one. And depending on what browser window is forefront, if you open a link, it opens that browser window, which means it opens that reference.
Right.
So I'm constantly at work. Of course, I'm just using my profile for work and that's all I'm doing. Someone sends me a YouTube video and I click on it and it starts the commercial. I go, what? Why is it? Oh, I'm in the wrong account.
Grab the
URL, throw it on my personal account, which I have YouTube Red on, and no commercials. I now do not watch commercials. Like, I'll do anything I can to not do those things. They're annoying as heck. Because of this little Google Play Music is what I actually do for the family account. And I've been talking about a lot of Geekspeak, actually, because I love not having commercials.
Yeah.
I think it's my radio history of public radio.
You getting paid for this?
No. I should probably think of another way to do it.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a way to hack to not get them as well.
I mean, they're ad blockers, probably. I don't know how much you can go around those.
All right, I'll try Orville if I can find a way to get access to it. It looks very much like watching the site from Fox.com. It looks very much like Galaxy Quest.
Yeah.
In the ship, it looks more like Galaxy Quest than Star Trek.
Yeah, but as I like to say, it doesn't have the Tim Allen misogyny, you know.
Yeah, he's a misogynist in that, isn't he?
Well, just in everything. He plays himself. He plays himself in everything. And I just don't care for it. But yeah, I like it. I think it's
Orville.
The Orville. I recommend it. The Orville.
All right, one more question and I'll let you go. What are you doing for Halloween this year? Are you going to have a costume?
Well, if I can get two other people. Do you want to co-costume with me? I have a costume I've been wanting to do for a long time, but I've never
already started my costume.
Okay. See, my costume is fantastic. If you can find two other people who are lazy who haven't started the costume like a day before, you dress up as a subpixel. Three people as a subpixel. One is red, one is green, one is blue, and you stand in the right order, and now you're a pixel, and you go around trick or treating.
Very, very good. Very clever. I like it.
Yeah, I'm not doing anything for Halloween.
You could just do yourself as a pixel.
Well, but then just, I have to choose a single color.
No, you do four colors. You do a quad thing, blue on your face. Aren't most things now duplicating blue because they're too weak a color? Or is that not done anymore?
I think there's like a million ways to do it.
It's so funny with these new devices, you can't even see the pixels, so it's very hard to know.
What's a pixel?
Greg, do you get a chance to you guys can unmute if you'd like. You wrote an abstract. Hurrah. Oh, let's have Ben read the abstract and we'll do the intro of the show. You ready to read?
Nope. Well, I got to find.
Today's episode, Monday aims to sleep in space.
Don't like Mondays? Twitter data shows it really is the worst day of the week. AOL Instant Messenger is shutting down in December, and a year in space is really bad for you. Ben, me, joins Lyle.
Me!
To discuss these stories and more on this week's episode of Geekspeak.
Cool.
Every once in a while, I have a moment of introspection.
You don't read smoothly when you do the introspection, I'm sure.
Where, like, my eyes are, like, I don't know how I'm reading the words, and I don't know how I'm understanding what I'm reading to put the right intonation in, and I don't know how I'm communicating the right...
Is that why you made your crazy tool?
Do you know what I mean? Like, do you ever just marvel at the fact that you work?
The other day, I drove to my older house accidentally. the house I moved away from in June. Just drove up the hill. And Wyatt's like, what are you doing? Or no, he said, Dad, where are we going? I was like, oh. And he just laughed at me. Having teenagers is really fun because they laugh at you a lot. How Doc's a Bastard, Orphan, Soon of a Corpse, and a Scotsman wrapped in the module of a forgotten slot in the Caribbean by Providence, imperished in squalor, flow up to be a zero and a dollar. That is so hard to do.
The Glen Dollar, fund and bother without a bother, font a lot farther by looking a lost Harper, by skiing a tot starter, by skiing a shelf started by 14. They placed him in charger a in charger of a trading chapter.
And every clay hole saves worth ski. I can't do it. Skeeking slaughter and started. Away across the wives, he struggled and Kent, his heart up. Inside, he was logging.
Then a hurricane came and devastation rained. Our man saw his future dripping down the train. Put a pencil to his temple, connected it to his brain. And he wrote his first refrain, a testament to his pain. Well, the word got around, they said this kid is insane, man. Took up a collection just to send him to the mainland. Get your education, don't forget from whence you came. And the world's gonna know your name. What's your name, man?
Alexander Hamilton. My name is Alexander Hamilton. And there's a million things I haven't done. But just you wait, just you wait.